go for it, whenever.
All right, we are here today talking about Pope Francis's recent words that he is honored that he is attacked by American Catholics. We're also going to look at the recent announcement that was through Fox Business that Vatican City is currently running a $76 million operating deficit and what that might mean for Vatican City and the Holy See in the maybe the next year or years to come. So, Tim, how are you?
I'm good. This story is funny. It Pope Francis, by saying what he said, he started the infinite regression that's much similar to you talking to someone and you say, oh, I don't care. And then the next person says, well, I don't care if you care. And then the other person could say, well, I don't care if you care if I care. That's what he is. So, I mean, we are American critics. You know, I guess we're going to get into this. Loving, faithful critics from within the church. And so we felt designated, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's dialogue, I guess. All right. So before we jump in, we'll say our prayer. Latin prayer of the day. We'll do the Pater Noster. And then we'll jump right into it. Nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Pater Noster, qui es in caelis, sanctificetur nomen tuum, adveniat regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen.
Amen.
Nomine Patris et Filii, Spiritus Sancti. Amen. All right, a lot of people have been asking, hey, I want help with Latin prayer. So this Monday coming up, so in what, 4 days, I'll be hosting a online Catholic webinar, and we'll go through four Latin prayers. We'll do the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, and we'll do the table blessing. Bless us, O Lord, Benedict Domine. That will all be Monday night special feature. So please go ahead and go to Dr. Taylor Marshall channel and get notified for that webinar. We'll be going through those prayers, basics of Latin, pronunciation, etc. Also, announcement before we get into the Pope Francis business is this Tuesday, September 10th, we are opening fall enrollment for the new St. Thomas Institute. This will be for all 8 curricula and certificates, including Christ in the Old Testament, where we're going through every book of the Old Testament and finding Christ in the Catholic Church in every single book. And then in January, we'll begin our history of the Roman Rite and the Latin Mass and all 7 sacraments. So if you'd like to join, go to newstthomas.com, newstthomas.com, and get on the waiting list. There's a waiting list. I think there's almost 500 people on that waiting list right now. So if you want to get in, please go to newstthomas.com and get on that waiting list. All right, Tim. Are we critics of Pope Francis? And is it responsible for someone in authority to say he's honored by the critics, by the criticism?
Yes and no. Okay. Answer. I mean, like... Yes.
Thank you. I mean, end of show.
Good morning. Yeah, clearly. I mean, when you typed in, I guess, one of those first shows back well before October last, I think September, there's one point where I was getting contacted by people, old friends all over the world, because you typed in Pope Francis to Google and our Vegano vid came up. You know, that was.
Yeah, it was the number one vid.
Yeah, them was the early days. So yes, and I mean it was siding with, you know, Archbishop Vigano, who is the clear critic of Pope Francis in the world today, the Pope Francis pontificate. So yeah, I mean you can't say no, but it's not one. There are different types of Pope Francis critics. There are bad ones, you know, ones that say he's, you know, I mean I don't mean evil, but incorrect ones. There are evil ones who hate the Catholic Church, and so they hate him because he's Catholic. There are deeply, deeply disordered ones. So to just use the blanket statement to pertain to question two by you, you know, is this irresponsible for him to say all critics of me make me proud, meaning all critics of me are bad? That's really
what
he's saying.
Well, I don't think he's saying all. It's the American ones.
All American critics. Yeah. Okay, all American critics. He's not saying all, but he's saying all Americans. And there are good critics of him and bad critics of him. And he said it, by the way, to America Magazine. I can't remember if you mentioned that. So that makes it like, you know, he's talking to America Magazine, the title of our nation, you know, Jesuit rag. And it's almost like he's talking to Americans about Americans. It makes anyone who's an American, even a good-hearted, holy critic of Pope Francis, like fringier. And it's. I mean, how do you feel about that? I don't think you can feel too differently than I do.
Well, I whenever it comes to popes, bishops, priests, I just because I'm a dad, I always just go to the analogy of being a dad. Right. So the Pope is the Holy Father. He's the big papa. And I think to myself, would I ever say to the kids, I'm honored that you criticize me. And I think the only context that I would say that is if my kids were right. You know, sure. if they say, hey, Dad, you weigh 400 pounds. We need to talk about your health. That's not good. We're being critical of you right now. And I know they're right. I would be honored by that. They're looking out for me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it were malicious or untrue, I don't know how I would derive honor from that. Right?
He's saying it at least one other way. There's at least one other way you say that.
Okay, and so those are the only two ways what's the third way?
Well, so on the left, there's the thing. I wish I had a bunch of ready-made examples. I feel like there have been. I feel like President Trump has criticized someone. They said, I'm honored by the fact that he did. It means you're such a scumbag when the party that's speaking defensively says that right. about X, the direct object of the counter criticism, you know, the criticizer. It's like that this person is such a scumbag that I must be doing something right. And I think that's how clearly he meant it. I don't think he's saying that his American critics are right. Like 400-pound Taylor.
Yeah, I think right. you're correct, and that's why I find it so odd, because the ways that I would read it as a father don't overlay on the map. Basically what he's saying is, I think you American children are scumbags,
right?
And I'm because you're scumbags and you say negative things about me, that means it's a positive,
right?
So
right,
it's a diss track against the Americans. I'm going to put the article up on the screen. This is from got so many things on my screen. MSN. This is MSN. Pope on critics. It's an honor if the Americans attack me. Now, the context for this is that author Nicolas Sanezi, who covers the Vatican for the French Catholic newspaper La Croix, presented it to Francis on a flight to southern Africa. In the book, Sanezi charged the fierce criticism of Francis among the American conservatives who loathe. Now, here it is, folks. This is how right. they're setting up the game. American conservatives who loathe his outreach to migrants and China, his denunciation of free market capitalism, his environmental concerns, and his relaxation of church rules on the death penalty and sacraments for civilly remarried Catholics. Some have gone so far as to accuse Francis of heresy. So these are talking points, I think, Tim, that all of our listeners are familiar with. Immigration, sure. We talk about that. China, talk about that. Free market capitalism, environmental concerns, relaxation of church rules on death penalty, and civil remarriage. So in presenting the book to Francis, Senese, and I'm probably saying it wrong. I was born that way. Senese explained that he wanted to show Francis problems with the U.S. church and how Francis had responded with quote-unquote spiritual weapons. Here's the Pope. Quote, "For me, it's an honor if the Americans attack me," Francis quipped, as he handed the book to an aide. The Pope added, "This is a bombshell," end quote. Now, it's interesting here because they're setting up the battlefield or the chessboard, whatever analogy you want to use. And they, what they want to do is they want to contain the criticism. So they want to say it's an American criticism.
Sure.
This, and here's the narrative. These darn Americans are rich, lazy capitalists, and they're all upset about McCarrick from last summer. And so because of McCarrick, they hate the good and humble Pope Francis. And that's the problem with these Americans. They're rich, they're lazy, and they're all spun up over McCarrick. So really, the criticism for Pope Francis is American. Everyone else in the world loves him. It's just the Americans.
You think it's got something to do with McCarrick? Because I think I would guess they would want to hush that altogether. You know, like, because he's so in CMA, he's so tied with McCarrick. I hear them saying all the other stuff. Capitalists, you know, they're protecting the capitalist ribs. You know, they hate the migration thing because he's really talking about, you know, 65% America, I guess, with 35% sprinkled in Muslim immigration to Europe countries. But he's talking about us when he talks about immigration. And a couple of the other pet issues, the environment, that's all America. I agree with you. You think they're saying that we're upset about McCarrick, like because of McCarrick's association with Pope Francis? Because some of this stuff is not that clear, actually.
It doesn't matter what the facts are. I think what their approach to this is, Americans are upset about McCarrick, and so they're taking their anger and placing it on the Pope. The Pope's a victim here. The Pope's their narrative is the Pope is a great guy. He's doing great stuff in the church. He's completely reforming everything in the Curia. He's getting rid of bad cardinals and bad bishops. And these Americans are critical and angry about the Pope. But the reason is because of that one bad apple, McCarrick. I think that's their narrative. They're trying to contain criticism of the Pope as an American phenomenon.
Yeah.
And McCarrick is the scapegoat, not Francis.
Got it. I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm inclined to believe that, well, whatever. Okay, so point number one, I have to point this out because it just sticks out so much in my mind and it's so irritating. Regarding Amoris Laetitiae and their mention of communion for the civilly divorced and remarried, people on, particularly grad students, teachers of seminaries and universities who are kind of in the center of all this, that people out there have to understand, they might not get this. Pedants, professors, scholars, even ones that are inclined toward faithfulness, inclined toward what you'd call the Catholic right wing, you know, following the rules and whatnot, do not like sticking their neck out at all. And basically in grad school, whether you're teaching or learning, anything you do is considered sticking your neck out. So any kind of even temperate, well-reasoned, deliberate commentary on Amoris Laetitiae after April 2016, any kind of commentary was considered, ooh, you're sticking your neck out there, right? Because it was so obviously wrong to comment at all against it, even to say, wow, he's giving communion to the civilly divorced and remarried. Okay, wow, I'm not going to say much, but that's what he's doing. Even that was considered a political statement. What the byline was, the talking point, talking head mantra of centrist Catholicism for the rest of 2016, and then it kind of died down. But after April to December, say, 2016, was to say this. Well, we don't know precisely what Amoris Laetitiae accomplishes, right? I mean, you remember this. We don't know what, I don't know if the, if Francis would even try to overturn Familiaris Consortio by JP2, the last word on the topic, with a footnote. He's not doing that. Francis isn't right. insane. He's doing something else here. And we're like, all the time, I was really invested in those synods in the run-up to it. No, that's clearly what he's doing. You know he's doing it. Come on, don't pretend. And I said, just wait. Just wait. Because you already had the Argentine bishops, three or four, within a couple months later, saying, hey, this is what it means. And he said, yes, I endorse your interpretation of it. This is the only interpretation of it. And then they got quiet after that. So maybe it wasn't the full duration of the year. But listen to the way that a typical, you know, leftist secular smut rag characterizes Amoris Laetitia. I just want to point that out because right. I'm not over Amoris Laetitia yet, people. They say, hey, Americans are mad. You know, I don't know why all Americans would be mad about this. We have tons of divorce here, right? So it doesn't make sense. Only faithful Catholics are mad about this. But yeah, yes, this is how a leftist would characterize Amoris Laetitia. Any sane leftist would be like, he gave communion to the civilly divorced and remarried, and the faithful people, if we're being honest, are mad about it, or we're very critical of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting that it says Francis responded with spiritual weapons, and then Francis says this is a bombshell. I'm actually kind of happy the Pope's using some church militant language here. Right. We're suddenly talking right. about weapons and bombs spiritually. Whoa, is this Pope Francis pontificate? Yes, it is. Yes, this is the context. I think Francis has, over the past year, taken on so much water or taken so many hits that they need, you know, when just follow Olinsky's playbook or any political playbook. You need to be able to mitigate and soften the criticisms and discount those who are saying them. And I think in this case, he, judging the globe, because he's a pope, he's global. He doesn't think about just one nation. He thinks about, okay, most people in the world are going to be somewhat critical of the United States. For crying out mm-hmm. loud, they got President Trump over there. Mm-hmm. So let's just go ahead and scapegoat the Americans. So all criticism is Trumpist America. You know?
True.
And you saw this a while back, too, where they're trying to connect Bannon with Burke. Right? So, I mean, if
sure.
And let's be honest. Let's be real honest. Some the most outspoken critics of Pope Francis are American or tied to America.
Sure. Sure.
Cardinal Burke.
Or if they're Italian, they come and they talk here, like Mattei. They come here all the time. Or someone like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Cardinal Burke is the canon lawyer, American cardinal par excellence. And then Archbishop Vigano, who's Italian, true, but he was the nuncio. He was the papal ambassador to the United States of America. He's very well connected and embedded in America.
Right.
The last year, the biggest hits have come from those two voices. And so in a sense, you know, Francis is making, I think, a right connection. But I think they really think that they can dump the whole critical response to this pontificate on the Americans. I think it's a good strategy. We'll see if it works. It seems that other people across the world are waking up. But it's true. I think America is still, I'd love to, in the comments, I know we have, I think, almost 40% of our viewers are non-U.S. Americans. So I'd be interested to hear their response to that. Do you guys who are not American sense that the voice against policies and doctrines of Pope Francis is chiefly American?
Just curious, was that a reference to Miss South Carolina, all U.S. Americans?
No, it wasn't.
You said U.S. Americans, and I was like, I personally believe.
Well, you know what's interesting is sometimes every once in a while I get someone who's cheeky and they'll be like, Well, I'm Canadian. I'm Pan American. I'm from Chile.
Yeah.
Like, well, I meant United States American.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Why no, I say I, that. That's why I say
I know.
That.
I'm not making fun. I just I sent you that, right? Didn't
Yeah,
didn't
yeah,
you
did.
Miss that at the time, and I was like, yes, dude, this was like one of the greatest moments of my life.
Miss South Carolina.
Miss South Carolina. All right. Anyway, so yes, that's all. Those are all good points. I Vegano. Oh, we're both drinking from our green Vegano today.
Yeah.
I personally believe about all U.S. Americans that no, my belief is this. Here's another thing I'm not willing to let slide. Morris Letizia was on one side. On the second side, connected to this issue, is Pope Francis about a year ago standing in that plane and saying, "I will not say one word." And he wagged his finger more or less at the world press who he had on board, pontifical fuselage there, flying back from Ireland or wherever it was. And he said, "I'm not going to tell you one thing. Use your journalistic professionalism to figure out what to do here. Think about this. And now he's saying, about a year later, he's saying, "Look, you guys know the deal. You know the only people that would dare to criticize me." Now I'm going to change around, you know, the context, are Americans. Without ever resuming what he promised. I want everyone to put this together here. No, there's never any resumption. There's never any retaking of the mantle from what he said a year ago, which he at the time, remember, he said, "Hey, I might say another word once you've done your homework." It's like, once we've all ascertained beyond all doubt that definitely you're guilty in this, which we basically have between then and now. A lot of evidence has come out. He's never done that. And he's wagging his finger again, except this time it's Americans, just capitalists or whatever. They like beating up on the environment. And so he's not resuming it. And he basically had an admission a year ago. This is how you know there's some serious sophistry happening. He said, "Hey, yeah, I'm so guilty. I'm not going to deny it, but that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to look too guilty." And now, without doing what he sort of soft promised that he would, I'll retake this up at some later point, he's saying all critics are crazy. That's really what he said. That's the subtext here, if we're a bunch of actors, right? He's saying all critics of me are biased or crazy. And that would include, they're Americans. That would include, by dint of the fact that, most of the opposition to the McCarrick issue, most of the opposition to the Amoris Laetitia issue came from Americans, include anybody that even gave righteous criticism. So he's basically, I made a few connections there. He didn't say it himself. He's basically saying that even righteous criticism of him is intolerable. We already know this is his point of view, but that's really what he's trying to do there. He's making connections, and I picked up on him. Yeah, don't you think he's, if you toss in a Amoris Laetitia and you toss in what happened 1 year ago, then he's basically just saying, "No one criticize me or I'm going to call you the A word. You're like an American.
You're an American. Darn American people. America.
Capitalists. Yeah, America." Right.
Well, it's the Americans is now the slur. So, if you're criticized by an American, that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would almost be like if a Lutheran was watching TNT. I'm like, "Man, these guys, all they talk about is Trent and, sacred scripture and sacred tradition and the papacy and, holy sacrifice of the mass. These guys are a bunch of jokers." We'd be like, "Well, we're honored, Sir Lutheran."
Right, right. Exactly. Like,
thank you. And so that's sort of the position being taken here. It's, "Hey, these American guys, they're just a bunch of rich capitalists. They throw trash on the ground. They're just burning trash in their backyard. Carbon footprint that big. These guys are a bunch of jerks,
Nativists. They don't want to take in any migrants.
Yes.
They don't want to. Yeah. Yeah. They just want to keep everyone out."
I'm not sure. I think it's down to either France or the United States, but one of us has the biggest trad movement. I'm not sure who's bigger, but France, but United States is at least top two traddy in the world. So they're just a bunch of trads. They're burning trash. They're capitalists. They got it. All their employees are on food stamps over there that are just impoverished. You know, this is America, which is when in reality, it's the land of the free, prosperous. Economy's growing. Things are going great. I think the Catholic Church in America is actually doing pretty well. We're seeing a renaissance, a rediscovery of Catholic piety here in the United States. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm smiling.
I don't think he is, though. The Holy Father. Remember what he said about trads? This is like Ridges. Around 2015. He called us Ridges, and he said
Neo-Pelagian.
He said a lot of things, but what I'm thinking of is he Gnostic. Also said Neo-Pelagians. Dig. He said with youths that want to go to the Latin Mass. He didn't actually use the term trad. He just said with all these youths that want to go to the Latin Mass. Dig, there's some psychological issue. He said we had issues. Consult your therapist is what he said. Really? Because that's funny. Because I just literally, what if you're just like a Latinophile and you just really love the language? Let's say you don't even care about the liturgy. You know, you're going to like it more. Does that mean you have psychological issues?
I don't know this guy, but I've heard of a guy like this. He just loves Latin. I don't even think he's baptized, I've heard. He just attends the Latin Mass.
Yeah, that's the guy. I mean, I don't know who he is, but that's the exact test.
Yeah, I've heard of a guy like this. Someone said, I met this guy. He goes to the Latin Mass. He's not baptized. He just likes the Latin. Like, he's so into Latin. He's like, where else during the week can I go hear some Latin? So he's like, the Latin Mass.
That was my hypothetical.
Yeah. Well, that guy exists, apparently. Cool. Hope he gets baptized. So, we should pray to get baptized. But apparently there's a guy somewhere in the U.S. who just goes to Latin Mass, doesn't receive communion, he just goes for the Latin.
Well, so Pope Francis' sweeping criticism included him as well, even though he's not even a baptized Catholic. Right. And that guy, whatever your name is, buddy, you got psychological issues. So
yeah,
that the Pope says so. It's wild. He does the most sweeping, uncritical, you know, poorly, like, circumlocuted criticisms I've ever heard, Pope Francis. When he gets mad, it's a blanket statement. And again, the press likes to paint President Donald Trump as a really, really imprecise criticizer. I don't think he is at all. And it's not just because I support President Trump, but he has lots of blind spots. That's not one of them. He's good at making criticisms, and he's good at giving criticisms to the precise party he intends. Francis, we've talked about this before. I think we should spend some time on it here today. Not only is he a sloppy criticizer, counter-criticizer, he's a sloppy counterpuncher, let's say that, boxing term. But also, and this adds to it, he does not understand America and the West very well, does he? No. He does not know. I don't think he knows what we're really like over here.
No, I sense that that's often the case with South Americans.
That's
ones
true.
I've met South Americans tend to really not like us.
It's very
and they're not afraid to talk about it to your face. I'll grant them that. At least they're not on the sly.
Yeah. But they're openly prejudiced, right? In 2019, in an era when it's supposed to, you know, make all of the men in the room, you know, stroke their beards and cluck and tear at their garments, if somebody says something even insinuatively, you know, prejudiced, you do get this from a lot of South Americans. A lot of the South American priests I studied with at the Greg would just say, Tim, you're a nice guy. Yeah, how did you come from America? I was like, I'm a huge defender of the capitalism, a huge critic of environmentalism. I mean, all these things you hate, like, yeah, there's nothing antithetical between being a nice guy and disliking all these things. They have a robust intellectual tradition at their behest to defend them. But the South Americans are often the first guys to say, no, we're bigots, you know, and Pope Francis is one of these. I do not like America. He has made that clear. I think this is the most clear now, but he's made it clear throughout the entire pontificate. Right. I do not like people from this group. And remember, there was a criticism of him that came out from one of, you know, the five outlets we read a lot of. I don't want to name which one it was, around the time of the second synod in 2015, that said he is well known for his hatred of North Americanos.
Yeah. It's pretty obvious. No case needs to be made. Everyone in the world realizes Pope Francis. Let's just put it this way. If Pope Francis was buying a technicolored coat, you know, for one of his children, the American kid would not get St. Joseph's multicolored coat.
Mm-mm.
No, we wouldn't get that. And surprisingly, Argentina wouldn't get it either. He's not a big fan of Argentina.
Well, he hasn't been back. Hasn't been back to Argentina.
I think they'd run him out on a poll.
There's lots of speculation why. Yeah.
So I think his two least favorite places are United States and Argentina.
Those don't often go together in lists of people's least favorite places.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of times you have kind of one or the other, pick them. But yeah, that's a unique blend.
Yep, yep. Okay, so let's look at this other story. This is the Vatican is in some financial trouble right now. So this comes over on the Fox Business, and it says Pope Francis ordered officials to close a ballooning budget deficit in Vatican City and put an end to mismanaged spending in the Catholic Church's global headquarters. He says, I ask you to study all measures deemed necessary to safeguard the economic future of the Holy See and to ensure that they are put into effect as soon as possible. He wrote in a letter to, get this, Cardinal Reinhard Marx, head of the Vatican's Financial Oversight Council. Two observations here, folks. First, the guy who was running the financial audit was Cardinal Pell. He's now rotting in a jail cell in Australia over what seems to be, I don't know, I remain quiet on it usually, but it seems trumped up charges, right? He allegedly molested two altar boys in the sacristy while wearing all of his vestments. So the guy who had cracked open all the financial problems, he's in prison. Prior to that, the guy who cracked open all the financial problems and the bad books being run at the Vatican was a guy named Archbishop Vigano, right? So
right.
The two guys who have been looking into Vatican finances and found problems, one's in exile and hiding, and one's in jail. That don't look good.
No. You want to be careful with the have we ever done anything on Pell?
We've mentioned them, but we've never discussed them.
Been very circumspect. Yeah. I don't even know if we've really texted privately. Hey, do you want to do a show on Pell? I think both of us kind of just know. It's like, I don't want to do a post hoc propter hoc on Pell and be like, well, he's a conservative, therefore he must have been set up.
Right.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people gravitate toward that. My skepticism knows no boundaries. My skepticism greatly outpaces my, you know, conservative mistreatment skepticism, my overall, you're a Catholic prelate and you're accused of this. I'm not going to bat, right? Saying I know, because I don't know the facts of the case. I know people are skeptical and there might be a reason to reopen the case, but
right.
Whatever the facts are with Cardinal Pell, justice be done.
I would go on the I've looked into it. I think he's innocent, but I wasn't at the trial. I haven't heard the witnesses. I haven't seen, but it seems that this is trumped up, but I don't know. Right.
How do you get an Australian? I mean, it's common law. So it's not like no offense Aussies, but the term we use in law is it's not a kangaroo court. And I said non, so I'm not just making the kangaroo connection, but I mean, it's not a kangaroo court. It's common law. So they have common law system. I one thing I'm not that skeptical of is the criminal system. You know, you can say what you want about the civil system. It's not that easy to convict a guilty man in any common law court. Comes from England, comes from Magna Carta. So whatever the case is.
But there have been and can be a false conviction.
Of course. It's just rare. But you know, it could be here. You probably read it more than me, but whatever the case, yeah. And it's not necessarily Procter Hope. You got Vigano, who looked into this, and they already didn't like him just because of his dealing in the financials. And they probably already didn't like Powell because of his dealing in the financials. So there could be something there.
I mean, so the current one, Powell, he's in jail. The previous one was Vigano, he's in hiding. The one before that with Paul VI and John Paul I and John Paul II, everyone in that scenario got killed, suicided.
Right? Yeah.
And so it seems that if anyone ever comes to you and says, hey, do you want to audit the Vatican books? Think long and hard about that. Definitely wear the brown scapular while you perform that audit and go to confession weekly because you may not be long for this life if you're working on the Vatican books.
Right. Also, if someone ever comes to you, this is a related note, and asks, hey, are you interested in taking a part on the audit of the Fed, the U.S. Federal Reserve, which I'm a huge supporter of, end it, great, go do some holy work, but watch your neck, man. There's a reason that little holding house has not been audited. So, yeah. I mean, these places don't get audits for a reason.
That's right.
It's because of all the financial corruption that's endemic there. So, yeah, watch your back, CYA.
Yeah. So we got a $76 million budget deficit at the Vatican. And there was one detail that it's doubled since 2017. It says the Vatican City's deficit stood at 70 million euros or 76 million US in 2018, doubling since 2017. So in one year, it doubled. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some questions on why this is. Two come to my mind. Tim, I'd love to hear your theories. One is that these synods are expensive. They're doing synods every year. These aren't cheap. You're hosting hundreds of bishops, their staff. These are conferences. People need to be sheltered. They need to be fed. There's all kind of bureaucratic grease that needs to go into these things. So these are expensive, and he's running a lot of them. It's a big part of his pontificate. The second is, he's isolated the Americans. That's a big, big inflow of cash. And the Papal Foundation, which was just throwing $20 million, $25 million towards the Holy See, has closed up its purse. Yeah. Also, the Americans have said goodbye to Peter Pence. We're not going to give to that anymore. I don't know one Catholic, and I'm not talking about just traddies. I don't know one Catholic who gives money to Peter Pence in America. I don't know what it's like globally. It might be the same. So, you spend more money. You take in less money. You're going to start having a deficit double every year.
That's what it is. Yeah.
But you know what's going to fix it? Socialism, Tim.
Right.
Progressing socialism, the example of China, that's going to fix this problem. Why is it that people who believe in socialism always grind their nation into debt?
Well, that's what socialism is, right? It's spending, it's running a constant deficit and flyering it publicly, declaring like, look, we're not going to try to given the strictures of socialism, we're not going to try to cover that debt, right? It's just literally everything for everyone and nothing for ourselves, as the South American socialist Juan Martín used to say, everything for everyone and nothing for ourselves. And you never really make any money, right? So that's Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a complex. I mean, I don't think there necessarily is bespoken any corruption there. Anytime you see a deficit, you look at it cockeyed. But it's been a bad year for the Vatican. Like you said, Peter's Pence now is something that, you know, only a very, very foolhardy giver continues to give to. And after the year they've taken, they've kind of gotten the McCarrick summer of shame out of the world headlines, it seems, with this kind of, you know, today's headline kind of campaign. But, I mean, nevertheless, it was a rough year. And, yeah, and socialists spend. I mean, remember Pope Francis, it came out a few months after he took the Petrine chair that, you know, for him to get that humble abode, aside from the preordained papal appointment apartments, it cost more money to make all the translation than it would have for him to take it. So that he's not living cheaply there in Santa Marta. And, you know, the regime has, like you said, tons of synods, which has been precedented. There have been other pontificates with tons. But I think the way is socialism, which is spend, and never consider a bottom line.
Yeah.
Or there could be corruption. That also wouldn't shock me. I mean, I wish we had more facts. But
Joe and I were talking about this morning. Do you think, Tim, because this was an idea we floated, that Pope Francis is literally banking on a financial gift from the Republic of China or from Germany or from the UN? It's because you could just be careless and spend, but is there a deal? Is there some sort of financial assistance coming? Because he's not courting the Americans anymore, as we've talked about in the first part of today's show. All right, we're under the bus. We're done. I mean, when those debts, it's not like the United States where we can have debt and we can just print more money, fiat currency, till the cows come home. The Vatican can't print Vatican euros and pay its debt with that, right?
It's true.
Those debts are on the books.
Well, at the very least,
who's going to rescue them?
China largely rescued us for all those years in the middle 2000s by capitalizing our debt, right? Buying our junk bonds. Right. I don't know if it works the same way without fiat currency. And certainly there was some motive, as yet undisclosed, for Francis's extreme pointed interest in the China deal, which he had McCarrick all over, ironically.
Right.
McCarrick's fingerprints on everything. So, yeah, why does he care so much about, you know, selling out Cardinals? And I mean, he talks about us Americans like we're a bad guy. I guess we get accustomed maybe to doing the same thing in reverse. Like, oh, well, it's a bad deal. So, of course, Pope Francis wanted to do it. But I don't know as much about it, aside from what I see on Raymond Arroyo's show. The Cardinal Zen China deal, and a few articles I've read. So what really was motivating that? It very well could be financial. I mean, the problem is it's rote speculation. But I mean, why else would he care?
The Chinese could give a gift. I mean, $70 million for them is chump change, or they could just buy the debt. I mean, they're shrewd. They're probably not going to give a gift. They're probably going to buy the debt. You know. That's how you keep them on the chain, keep the dog collar on the Pope, keep getting what you want in China.
Right.
So
it could be it. And we know China loves to capitalize debt and
mm-hmm. they know the power of debt. They know that it holds political sway. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Of course, to our American ears, you know, $70 million. I mean, that's chump change to anyone. We're running
the USCCB runs on trillion. The USCCB runs annually on a $30 million budget. United States Conference of Bishops is $300 million a year.
Right. That makes a lot more sense.
Right.
You know, I mean, what, and the US, you know, deficit itself is, you know, 14 trillion That's trillion, not million. Yeah. You got million, but billion, trillion.
We can print our money. That's the difference.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a good solution. It's horrible. I'm just saying at least we have a sneaky way to fix it over time. It's just inflation and just print currency on a computer. Keep adding zeros behind the $100 bill.
No, but, that's true.
You know, so we at least have that option. The Vatican doesn't have that option. They can't go print yours. Yeah. I mean, maybe someone at the Vatican is printing yours. I don't know. But
we got to do a TNT on monetary and fiscal policy. At some point, we'll have only the wonky nerds. It's a side interest of mine. But yeah, I mean, it's a horrible solution, but it is something that's available to us in a way that is not available to them. I don't know, but it stinks. Can we say that? I mean, it stinks that they have. I mean, it reminds one of a 2012 problem that Pope Benedict at the very end of his pontificate was forced to look into, and that produced some of the conditions in the church today. Where's all that money going, you know?
Right.
It makes one scratch one's head. That's all.
Yeah. What's going on? Okay. So one last thing I want to cover here, and that is Pope Francis. He claims climate is in a state of emergency and asks the entire world to abandon fossil fuels. This is serious, people.
I'm going to go ahead and
entire world
just say, no
is
thanks.
In a state of emergency.
Request duly noted, Holy Father. You know, like you said to us when we, all those filial petitions, I'm not going to lie. It feels okay, nice to say, okay, check, I noted that. I'm not going to say one word on that.
Right.
But I'll get back to you, you know?
Yeah, so he says now in the message for World Day of Prayer for the Care of Creation, is that a day on the calendar now? Quote, now is the time to abandon our dependence on fossil fuels and move quickly and decisively towards forms of clean energy and a sustainable and circular economy.
Who's circular?
I don't know. I guess you like somehow create the energy and then still have the energy.
And you go around. Yeah, a merry-go-round. Maybe he wants a giant merry-go-round.
Maybe get kids.
World. Yeah.
You know?
Fueling?
So, yeah, I mean, we've said over and over, we have to be good stewards of creation. But this new UN globalist agenda is basically anti-family, anti-kid, right? And it's leading us to, ultimately, to say the world is so unsustainable that we need to reduce the population. Therefore, just like the death penalty, a long time ago, contraception was wrong. But now it's permissible because of our current global crisis. That's what's going on here.
Right.
This is the Trojan horse, folks. Mark my words. Come back and watch this video in 50 years. It will have happened. Because if death penalty can be changed because of current modern life, so can contraception, because population is so big and creation is so polluted. Get rid of the humans.
Situation ethics, Jesuit relativism.
Yep.
It's called situation ethics, and that is how they justify the death penalty. I mean, because everyone bought this death penalty argument. It's your analogy. Let's flesh this out some. I'm going to talk with Trent Horn, have a friendly talk with him in middle October about the death penalty. Really smart people on the Catholic right have bought this, so it must be a winsome argument, right? Yeah. That it must be convincing for a guy as smart as Trent Horn, who...
Wait, so Trent Horn believes that the death penalty is now anti-Catholic?
Yeah, you didn't see that tweet? He believes. Okay. Now, he's not... I don't think he's as rooted in as some of his colleagues there on, you know, Catholic Answers. I think he's open to it. He expressed real openness he should be commended for. He said, hey, I want someone to come on and make the best argument they can for it. And so I guess that's what I'll be doing when I go down to San Diego in mid-October to appear on the show. But I mean, yeah, I think he's a sharp cat, and so I was surprised that he went for this. I'm surprised anyone had, because it's so openly an admission of modernism. You know, the idea that this, you know, 1900-year-old doctrine, clear affirmation by the church for the death penalty, a very clear, you know, doctrinal embrace of the death penalty, can now people could say, hey, well, the situation changed, situation right. ethics. Right. Now we have high-powered prisons. It's like, well, that has nothing to do with the morality of the death penalty, because the morality of the death penalty was never premised around exigency alone. Yeah. The way, say, shooting a bad guy that breaks into your store, that's premised around the situation, right? You can only shoot him while you wait for the cops to get there. But, you know, principle of double effect, all that, you know, exigency. You cannot, on the other hand, ever say that the Catholic Church's endorsement of the death penalty reduced to the situation. It was in principle. It's right. always been an in principle embrace of the use of the death penalty, no matter how exigent or non-exigent the situation is. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting when you see good minds, I believe, fall to this kind of relativism. That's all it is. It's winsome Jesuit ethics.
It is. It's Jesuitical. I like that word, Jesuitical. Uh-huh.
Dostoevsky uses it a lot.
Yeah. If you look it up, one of the definitions is dastardly. Tricky.
Yeah, no, I know.
Jesuitical. It's tricky.
It is.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
Like the Run DMC song.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I know you gotta run out. You got an appointment with baby Miriam.
Yes, I do.
Baby's baptized. Baby's in the church. Baby's saved. Baby's anointed.
And accordingly, I look tired. I have an appointment for baby Miriam with the doctor. You made it sound like her secretary like penciled me in for an appointment to go see her. I gotta run into her office next. We're taking her to the doctor. So
awesome. We'll check up.
Appointment good. On her behalf.
But she's doing well, right?
Eating, she's doing well.
Growing.
She's eating, sleeping, doing the hot dog impression that newborns do so well.
Baby.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. Okay. Well, everyone, please subscribe to this channel. Like the video if you haven't liked it already. One of the most important things you can do is hit the share button. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. And, of course, please support the channel on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/ Dr. Taylor Marshall. I'll send you some signed books. Also, you can get into NSTI, New St. Thomas Institute. New St. Thomas Institute waiting list. Is now, and you can get on that waiting list at newstthomas.com, and we will open up those spots on Tuesday, September 10th. On Monday, September 9th, I'll be doing the Catholic webinar on Latin prayers, so make sure you show up. That is a live event, so make sure we'll go through 4 Latin prayers and go over some basics. And everybody keep praying for Steph Gordon and baby Miriam. Everything continues to go well. Everybody's healthy and safe. And we'll close in our prayer. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Gratia plena.
Gratia plena.
Dominus tecum. Benedicta tu in mulieribus et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Jesus. Sancta Maria. Mater Dei,
ora
pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostrae. Amen. Gloria Patri et Filio et Spiritui Sancto, sicut erat in principio et nunc et semper, et in saecula saeculorum.
Amen.
All right, everybody, God bless. Pray that rosary every single day, as Our Lady of Fatima taught us, and we'll see you in videos to come. God bless, and Godspeed.
Peace.